Hello, how are you?
Hello, Tim, how are you?
I'm very historically adept at the moment because I've been listening to history podcasts and I know a lot more about history than I did before.
Okay. And you're having your elections soon.
Exactly. That's
historical,
right.
Which is also historical elections.
Exactly. A historical moment. A moment in history, as they say. I don't know why I've just got more interested in history. I'm listening to this podcast called The Rest is History. And I now know more about Custer's Last Stand than I really need to know. 8 hours of what happened to General Custer. Did you know, by the way, that General Custer was not scalped? Because, oddly enough, even though he was known as the general with the long flowing locks, he cut his hair just before he went into the Battle of Little Bighorn. There's a little historical tidbit that you didn't know before.
The lion's mane got cut, then it's never a good sign.
That's right. And they didn't recognize him. It seems like nobody recognized him, because otherwise they would definitely have scalped him. But they didn't. So although a lot of other people in the army were scalped, he was not. Just goes to show. I don't know what it goes to show. I don't think it goes to show anything.
Never. Do cut your hair every now and then, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, exactly.
Can I interrupt a tiny historical fact?
Okay.
It has to do with football. We had a very good football team in the 1980s with Gullit. Everybody knows Gullit. And he had that big flowing locks. Remember? He has a sort of dreads.
And by we, and, we're talking about
we the Dutch,
here, right?
Yeah, you're the Dutch. Okay. And then he cut his hair and he looked all funky and trendy, but the Dutch team lost its momentum at the same time. So it was a whole theory that losing his hair, cutting his hair, took away the powers of the Dutch team. So there you are. That's our general.
Like Samson. Very like Samson.
That's where it comes from, of course.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder why that is. I wonder where that comes from. Do you think it's something to do with, as you get older, you lose your spunkiness and ambition, and so there's a correlation between having a little bit of hair and losing your way in your function on the planet?
Does look impressive, though. You know, that long flowing hair, that does give you sort of power.
No, this is true. Yeah, it gives you a sort of sense of virility and
speed and power, physical power.
Yeah, and sometimes when you kind of flick it in the right way, it's impressive.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll get on to history. But in the meantime, Fred, what have you been listening to?
I've been listening to somebody with very short hair. It's called Steve Albini. He was a guitarist, singer, songwriter, producer. Most people will know him from the In Utero album of Nirvana, and some might know him from PJ Harvey's album, and others might know him from the Pixies. But he was also in several bands, and he was actually quite an obnoxious character who loved to insult people, and not people who would be his enemies. Like, he was a sort of very alternative punk rocker, but he loved to insult other alternative punk rockers. And he was in the band called Big Black. And then when they split, he formed a new band that he called Rape Man, which didn't go down so well. It was named after a Japanese manga comic strip. But that was his thing. You know, he loved to shock. He loved to provoke. He didn't do any concessions. But towards the end of his life, he died a couple of weeks ago. He died beginning of May 2024. He sort of repented and he understood that in a small circle, you could do those things. You know, you could shock people. But he said in the end, it turned out that all the people who agreed with him were sort of far right wingers that you don't want to be associated with. So he thought, okay, well, maybe I should stop all this nonsense. So I wrote an obituary about him for Vrije Weekblad. And because of that, I had to listen to Big Black I skipped Rapeman. I thought, okay, there are limits. So Big Black it was.
Okay, let's have a listen.
Nothing to do, sit around at home, stare at the wall, stare at each other, wait till we die, stare at each other, wait till we die. Probably come to die in this town. Live here my whole life. There's kerosene around. Something to do. Kerosene around. Just something to do.
I don't know what to say about that. I didn't like it. I mean, I'm sorry. Just kind of arbitrary for me. I mean, I can understand why kind of headbangers like.
Well, in its day, you know, this was like early 80s, 82 or something. It was very revolutionary. You know, he had that drum machine that kept on pummeling without relentlessly. And he had that very distorted guitar and that bass that sort of was totally in your face. And so this is, you know, this is how many years ago? 42 years ago, which is a lifetime for many people. And now it sounds, you think, but then it was something really new and groundbreaking in many ways. Also the production, it was very in your face. There was no echo or delays or fancy stuff. This was what you got. And it was about somebody who wanted to burn things to the ground. So anyway, I mean, I've been listening to that.
Okay, you can see his character in the musical style. I suppose that's something that you could say for it, is that it's definitely true to his approach to the world. There was nothing put on.
No, and he liked to make ugly things. He wanted to make things ugly, and he definitely succeeded there.
yes. All right. So in kind of preparation for this little discursion into history, I was just thinking of bands who write about historical events and came across this, and you'll recognize it.
Be clear, there's just two sides calling names out of anger, out of fear. And if you say it wasn't racial when they shot him in his tracks, well, I guess that means that you ain't black. It means that you ain't black. I mean, Barack Obama won, and you can choose where to eat. But you don't see too many white kids lying bleeding on the street.
Yeah, so this is the Drive-By Truckers. The song is called What It Means. And I thought it was interesting in a way because it's about a historical event. This is about the a sort of moment in American history about the election of Barack Obama and sort of racial politics and so on, which was very unusual. But I thought it was interesting. You know, people didn't know what to make of it then. And isn't that just like history in general? You never really know exactly what to make of it. There's that famous saying that history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. But how does it rhyme? What is rhyming here? It's intriguing. Sort of interestingly, the Drive-By Truckers have this very small and dedicated following. They're not really top 40 artists, but they've been going a hell of a long time, and the music is just quality. It's just great.
Which album is this from again?
Yeah, it was from the American Band album.
Why I asked you is because I saw them when that album came out in 2016. I saw them somewhere in Alabama. And they had a big sort of flag with Black Lives Matter over their keyboard for everyone to see. You know, they were like in the middle of redneck country playing with that flag, which I thought was quite brave. And then I saw them last year again in New York, and they didn't play a single song from that album, which I thought maybe they're fed up with, because it was by far their most political album. It was directly political, whereas normally they sing songs about people in little towns and alcoholics and murders and, I mean, happy tunes usually. But this was an out political album, and I think they must have got tired of it and thought, let's now have some fun again and play some more of the rock. And, you know, they're always stories. They're long stories, some of their songs. And they still have story songs. But they didn't play like Condemned, but not, Compelled, but not Defeated. Those songs they didn't play, which are like fist-raising songs, which I thought was...
And I think the album itself didn't do very well.
It's my favorite album, but... Anyway, we're going to talk about dates.
Important. Yes, dates and history and all of that sort of stuff. And so, yeah, this is the challenge, I think. It's just there's not a huge number of songs in popular music about historical events. But there's quite a lot, you know. It's and I just think it's a fascinating topic for a popular song. You know, it's just, you've got 3 minutes, maybe 5 minutes, you know, eight verses if you're lucky, you know, to talk about an historical event. So it's a very difficult thing to do. And the songs that do it well, I think they deserve extra respect. There are some really fabulous examples by very unusual bands talking about very worldly things. So that was the motivation for this topic. All right, so let me play your first song and then you can tell us about it.
Und dann rettet kein Kavallerie, keine Pfarrer kümmert sich da drum, der bis höchstens ein Zett in der Schnee und fällt lallend Verlässigkeit nach und Kristallnacht.
That was one you didn't know, eh?
yes. I recognize one word at least. That's helpful.
Yeah. It was, you know, I thought, what were major events? And first I thought, you know, U2, Sunday Bloody Sunday would have been a good one.
Yes.
And then I thought Bob Dylan with Story of Hurricane, you know, that boxer, which is a sort of historical event, and he was jailed for it. But suddenly I thought of this one because it's very current in many ways. Kristallnacht, there's a German band called BAP, B-A-P. And it was basically the band of one guy, Wolfgang Niedecken was his name. And he was a sort of lefty musician, grew up in the 60s, sort of our age, I guess. And he formed this band and they had several big hits. But this was a big hit in Holland in 1982, if I remember well. He initiated events that were against racism. They were from Cologne, and they spell it Kristallnacht, N-A-A-C-H, instead of N-A-C-H-T, which is their sort of local dialect, I guess. So Kristallnacht is the night of the broken glass, and this was an event, a pogrom, that was initiated by the German Nazis, and it was against the Jews in Germany. And it happened on the night from the 9th till the 10th of November in 1938. And that was sort of a general thing, like we should attack Jews and everything they own. So they burned 1,400 synagogues and 7,500 shops and businesses that belonged to Jewish people were destroyed. Jewish houses were destroyed, schools, burial grounds, hospitals, and the fire brigade wasn't allowed to interfere. So they had to finish burning out before anyone could do anything. And 96 people were murdered during that night. So this band sings about that, but then in a sort of current setting. So, you know, it's all in German, but I've translated one of the verses, where he sings, "But those who feel disturbed by anything that's different, swimming with the tide the way they're supposed to, those to whom gays are criminals, to whom foreigners are scum, they need someone to mislead them. When that happens, no cavalry is there to save the day. No Zorro's there to care. He's just pissing a Z into the snow. Babbling, falling, drunk with coolness. So what? Kristallnacht. So it's about the threat of right-wing violence, basically. And I thought it's, with everything that's happening in the world, it's quite an appropriate song.
Yeah, no, totally. And just one addition to the kind of historical record, in case people don't know, it was called Kristallnacht because the shop fronts of Jewish stores were broken into, and there was glass everywhere. It seemed like that there was, that there was broken crystals. And in a funny kind of way, the idea of Kristallnacht, where there was just crystals lying everywhere, is interesting because crystals are hardy and resilient, and there was there's a strange other interpretation or understanding of the idea of Kristallnacht. Anyway.
The Jewish community didn't like the term. And later they started using different names, like Reichspogromnacht, which means the pogrom night of the Third Reich.
Right.
And November pogromer, so the pogroms from November 38. Because Kristall sounded too glamorous, as you pointed out.
All right, well, great song. Interesting band, and great band, actually. I didn't know them before.
Yeah, it's a good song.
To them later. Yeah, it's a great song. All right, my first choice.
Back with my wife in Tennessee, when one day she called to me, Virgil, quick, come see, back old Robert E. Lee. Now, I don't mind chopping wood, and I don't care if the money's no good. You take what you need and you leave the rest.
All right, that was part of the Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, very famous song by the band, probably the most well-known song, I guess, or one of the most well-known songs of the band, written by Robbie Robertson. When I first heard the song, I thought, who's Dixie? I mean, why are they so hard on Dixie? What did Dixie do to that? So, it took me quite a long time.
Poor old Dixie.
Poor old Dixie. To understand that Dixie, was a slang term for the American South. This was and the song was a story about a young Southern soldier at the end of the war trying to understand the failure of the Confederate States and the loss of the Civil War. Which was brutal, by the way. There's been lots of civil wars around the world, but the American Civil War was just enormous. What is it? 1 in 5 men dead.
The wounds have never healed, have they?
Yeah, and it's still part of American. The scars are so embedded that they are still current today. But what I also thought is interesting about the song is that it shows how much history changes, or the interpretations of history changes. Because this is an incredibly popular song for a long time. It's very catchy. It was sung, the most popular version was sung by Joan Baez, who's very kind of left-wing, right on. And it's recently been cancelled. Because people consider it a glorification of slavery and of the Confederate cause. So there's a kind of backlash against it, and then there's a backlash against the backlash, of course, because
yes, and poor Robbie can't comment on it anymore. He died not so long ago.
That's right, but also because he was Canadian, so it wasn't just that it was written. It wasn't a sort of partisan, and it was more. No. It's much more an anti-war song than it is a sort of flag waving song for the South.
It's hard if you want to be subtle. It's easy to be misinterpreted. Huh?
Correct. Yeah, and this is the thing about history. Mm. Anyway, great song.
Yeah.
All right. This is your next song.
She's waiting for me when I get home from work. Oh, but things just ain't the same. She turns out the lights and rises in the dark.
We move into one another very easily. I mean, my first song was about a knight. Then your first song was about a knight. And then yours was an American historical song. This is American historical song about Independence Day. I thought, because the 4th of July is a day that recurs in many, many American songs. And I think Bruce Springsteen had that Independence Day song. I think, was it On the River? Yeah. But I didn't want the obvious one. So I thought this band X, there was late 70s, early 80s, LA band, rooted in punk, but they played much better than your average punk band. And they played rockabilly and bluesy stuff. And they had this song, 4th of July, which is basically a love story. It's about somebody who's depressed and somebody else who wants to shake her from her depression and tells her it's the 4th of July, the Mexican kids are doing fireworks and you're being miserable here in your house. And I like the idea of that there's those days where you're supposed to be happy and celebrate and be joyful and merry, and sometimes you're not. And then the whole world is celebrating and you're feeling utterly miserable. And I think the song is about that, just sort of the contrast between your mood and the national mood.
Okay.
That's it.
No, it's interesting. Quite a lot of bands play songs about the national day. In some ways, we could do a whole podcast on songs about the national day.
Yes.
I mean, there's no national day more well-known, I think, around the world than the 4th of July. American Independence
Day. Well, I think Bastille Day in France is probably equally well known.
It's interesting how bands approach the National Day, because, you know, often it's with a sconce. People look on the National Day as a moment of reflection and maybe cynicism. I haven't heard a sort of proud, happy National Day song for a long time. I suppose there are some. I mean, I guess if we think about it, there are some. Anyway,
I'm sure Eritrea has a whole list of very proud National Day songs that were compulsory. As a musician, you had to write a positive National Day song, otherwise you wouldn't be allowed to play anywhere.
No, that's right.
That's the impression I got when I lived there, actually.
Okay.
Well, they had to build national identity, so how do you do that? Any Dutch ones, but I couldn't think of any. I mean, there were some punk songs, but they were, of course, very anti-nationalism and National Day and being proud of your country kind of stuff. So, no.
Yes. Yeah, no. I mean, I don't think of the Dutch as tub-thumping patriotic. I'm sure that...
No. You know, well, we're supposed to now with all the new right-wing government who...
No, this is right. That's
proud
right.
Of our
maybe
country.
Maybe one will come out. Maybe this is a good opening for a Dutch band. All right. Talking about patriotic songs, how about this? All right.
Discharge papers came. Me and 2,000 others went to Stettiner for the train. Kiev, said the commissar. From there you're on way home. I never got to Kiev. We never came back home. Train went north of the Tiger. We're stripped and marched in fire of the great Siberian road. For miles and miles and miles. Stripes and tatters in a gulag left to die. All because comrade Stalin was scared that we'd become too Western.
So this is the Red Army Blues. It was a Waterboys song off the Pagan Place album. I've always been fascinated by this song. The Waterboys, Scottish band, very Celtic in its musical style, but fabulous. Just a very interesting band. Known songs, has been around for a long time now, still going, amazingly.
They were here 2 years ago or something.
Yeah, that's right. So never stopped. And great songwriters. Fantastic to have a fiddler and a saxophonist as part of the band too. It just gives them a song. Anyway, this song sort of came out in early kind of Thatcher years. But it was interesting because this is an anti communism song. And I think it was the first time I heard an ostensibly left-wing band questioning the Soviet project and just wondering about the... They had plenty of songs that were anti-Margaret Thatcher. But to me, this was it's a bit of an indicator of quite a big historical change, because nobody had written about the Stalin purges and had written so emotionally and so powerfully about a Russian soldier fighting in the Second World War and then being sent to a gulag afterwards because he had become too westernized, or because Stalin thought that he...
Have you read the background? Why he wrote it?
Yeah, I don't know the specific background to the song itself, but it was in the air at the time, I think. This was after the invasion of Czechoslovakia, and it was quite a long time after the invasion of Czechoslovakia.
Yeah.
But, you know, several things were happening at this point. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So there was this change of attitude in the West. The other thing that I thought was interesting about it is how relevant it is to today, that there was this authoritarian government and a kind of sadness and anger about the kind of militarism, about Russian militarism. I mean, it's interesting. Under Putin, of course, Stalin has now been rehabilitated. Opinion polls in Russia now suggest that Stalin is more respected than he's ever been, or as the victor in the Second World War, you know, that all of the purges were forgiven because of the Second World War victory. Anyway, very interesting song, very powerful, not very well-known song.
It's a very long song, eh? I mean, it's over 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And I find it, because he's that Mike Scott is the main guy, right, of the Water Boys. And he's a very Scottish, spiritual person. You know, he had all the Hall of the Moon and the Pagan Place. And this was sort of odd song, I think, in his repertoire, because most of the songs weren't very political. They were like, you know, about find peace with yourself. And he was very inspired by Patti Smith. And Patti Smith, of course, also a very spiritual person. So I didn't know this song. And I'm a bit surprised that he has such a... But I guess it's from a human perspective, from the soldier's perspective. And not saying this is good or bad. You know, it's just like Bob Dylan, I guess. You know, you take a character and you put him in a situation and you write about it without judgment.
Yes. And it's also, they must have thought that this was a important song because, you know, they gave it a lot of airplay on the album.
Yeah, but it was also the time of Red Wedge. Remember Red Wedge? It was Billy Bragg and Paul Weller and a few other bands who wanted to get rid of Thatcher and formed like a music rock movement, and they called it Red Wedge. And the idea was to make you vote against the Tories. Which was very left-wing, as you know, as the name implies. And then Mike Scott comes with this song around the same time, which is, I find, interesting.
Yeah, no, it's extreme.
Maybe it was a word of warning.
You know, maybe they linked in some kind of way. They didn't want to be unthinking left-wing.
Yeah, we are not pro-communism. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. In the same way that in the
Soviet Union.
Anti-Vietnam period, there was a lot of American flags were part of the process anyway.
It's good. It's a good tune, good subject.
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, the tune is not, in fact, original. The main musical theme was borrowed. I'm not going to pronounce it right. The writer, it was Lev Kanepa, and the song is Polyushko Polyar, I think.
Okay.
Which means Song of the Plains. All right, let's move on to something completely different. Die milieblare sing, sal ek weer herinnering terug na
onze brein. Is karen zo vroeg met druf in het pijn.
All right, Fred, where did you find this?
I'm writing a piece about South African country music. And and then I stumbled upon this. They're called Die Brils. And they were husband and wife, Frans and Sunny Bril. They were a working class couple. One worked in the railways, as a lot of Afrikaans working class people did at the time. And they formed this duo. They started recording in 1954. That the first album was called My Grijs Oud Moeder, My Grey Old Mother. And then they got hits. They were quite big in their days. And then there was Train to Pretoria was a big hit. And then they had this whole album. It's called, I actually have it here, but you can't see it because we don't YouTube it, but it's called The Miner's Lied, The Miner's Song. And it's a whole album, 12 songs, that's dedicated to the miners who died in one of the worst mining disasters in South Africa near, what was the place, Colebrook. It happened in January 1960, and 435 miners died, out of whom 429 were black, from Lesotho and Mozambique. And they wrote this album dedicated to the miners, and it's full of tearjerkers. But I love the harmonies, the husband and wife harmony. They remind me a bit of the Carter family in some ways.
And I was just going to say,
It's a bit like Steve Albini in many ways, which is what you get. This is them singing with a guitar and some steel guitar in the background, and that's about it. What they did was they bought the newspapers and looked for sad stories, and then they wrote songs about that. But they were seen as lower class. And, you know, in the 1950s and 60s, the Afrikaners wanted to be seen as sophisticated and literary. Yeah. And SABC actually banned two of their songs from the radio in 1957. One was Sans Deux de Tralies, At Night Through the trolleys, you have in a jail, those are the trolleys, and Engel in the Himmel, which is Angel in Heaven, and they weren't played on the radio. So these guys were revolutionaries, and I thought they had a concept album in 1960. It's quite something, and I also like it. I genuinely like it. I think it's great music.
I love the it sounds like the kind of surfer Hawaiian slide guitar in the background. It seems very sort of contrasting, but the lyrics are great. The harmonies are interesting. The originality is all there. It's great. Yeah.
Well, what I also like, because I was watching on YouTube, there was a couple did a cover version of it, and the woman, I mean, she sings it well, but she starts vibrating her voice, know, like that, and the Brils didn't do it. And that was exactly what the Carter family also never did, because it wasn't permitted basically by the church and all that, because it would show that you were like showing other kinds of emotions, sensuality, sort of erotic things, if you started vibrating your voice. So you had to sing as straight as you could to not give people the impression that you weren't a good citizen.
Right.
And I thought
so
that they
followed
that. So no
vibrato, because vibrato is about sex.
No vibrato, exactly. Isn't that interesting?
No, it is. And I've always thought that the connection between sort of Afrikaners of that period and the American South has always been very strong.
But in America, this would be called hillbilly music.
Exactly, yeah. And the origins of the music are the same. The style of the music is often very similar. Mm. The
instruments are the same.
Instruments are the same.
Which
is amazing. Anyway, so that was De Graaf in die Mijn, The Grave in the Mine. And weirdly, once again, we are completely in sync, because
I keep straining my ears to hear a sound. Maybe someone is digging underground. Or have they given up and all gone home to bed, thinking those who once existed must be dead? Have you seen my wife, Mr. Jones? Do you know what it's like on the outside? Don't go talking too loud, you'll cause a landslide, Mr. Jones.
All right, so this is the Bee Gees, the New York mining disaster. And of course, you know what the significance of the New York mining disaster is.
Tell me.
It didn't happen. There was no New York mining disaster. The Bee Gees completely made up the whole thing. There was one a long, long, long time ago. It was about a mining disaster, but the mining disaster about which they were writing took place in Wales, not in New York. But they were trying to break through into the American market. So they thought they better write something about so that Americans could relate to. So they came up with this thing about the New York mining disaster.
It's about 10 years after the Brills, right? Or maybe 7 or 6 or something. I mean, the Brills came out in the early 60s. This is 5 years later,
correct.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, this is the incredible thing about the song, right? It was the Bee Gees' breakthrough song. Was the first song that they wrote that charted in the States.
Yeah.
It was the first song that they released after they had come from Australia into the UK. I found another weird and interesting little tidbit about it, and that is that it was written because there was a power blackout in the studio, and they sat in the darkness of the stairwell and wrote the song about miners being trapped in a dark place. So it was very driven by the British load shedding, which, you know, happened back in those days.
I was about 10 or something when I heard this song. It's quite cheerful in some ways, isn't it? But I thought, how weird that they had a mining disaster in New York, because I didn't realize that New York's also a state. I mean, you know, yes. New York as New York City.
The city, yeah.
And I thought it was very funny to have a mine there that collapses. But anyway.
You know, one interesting thing about the song is that it's one of the very few songs where the title of the song is not part of the lyrics of the song.
Yeah.
There's another thing. It sounds a bit like a ditty. It is as kind of pulling on your heartstrings as De Graaf en Humain. But it did have a resonance in music because when David Bowie wrote Space Oddity, he said he had based the lyrics on the New York mining disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, and Space Oddity is also a, you know, about a trapped man doomed to die. You know, the.
Yeah, it's an sort of inversal situation. Of the situation, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
Instead of a mine shaft, you're up in the air, but the same thing is happening to you.
Yeah, and there's one other little thing that I should add, and that is the charts around the world. This song, including Australia, by the way, this song achieved the highest position in South Africa.
Number one.
It was number two in the Springbok top 50 or whatever it was.
Wasn't it number one anywhere else?
Nope, never made it. But it did chart everywhere. I mean, it charted everywhere. It almost made it to the Billboard top 10.
Number three in Holland,
Yes, exactly. And interestingly, a lot of people thought that it was written by the Beatles, that it was a Beatles song. It does have a kind of Beatlish sort of like play to it, you know, the...
Yeah, Paul McCartney more than John Lennon then.
Yeah, I mean, the writing from immediate situations, lots of melody,
and have a
lots
person
of harmony
in it as well.
Yeah, that's right. So a lot of people thought that it was a Beatles song. Anyway, so that's our last song.
Now we got to choose,
and
man.
Now we've got to choose, man.
Well, I'll drop X, because that wasn't really, I mean, it was more like the background to a small story. So that we can, that's my
That's your concession to the...
Yeah. You can drop one as well.
Yeah. What am I going to drop? I guess out of the three songs, I have to drop the Bee Gees songs because it wasn't about a historical event. So,
yes. Virtual event.
Yeah, it was an imaginary event. Maybe that's a good reason to include it, you know, but anyway, the brief was a historical moment. I have to say, out of your songs, I have to say I loved Kristallnacht.
I thought too. I mean, the Brils is nice as a curiosity.
Yes. I would say,
but
it's
it doesn't have a bigger message. Whereas Kristallnacht is got a, you know, the Brils is very like about that particular event, and that's it.
There's no words
of warning.
And if you read the lyrics of the Kristallnacht song, you know, it's about the event, but it's also about an analogy, you know, about the analogy of sort of hatred of and
foreigners, others, the other.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, they're quite poetic. I mean, he was a big fan of the Kings, of Bob Dylan, and you can see that in the lyrics. It's not like... He's sort of to the point. He's quite wordy about the whole thing, but I think he does it very well.
Yeah, I mean the downside of it is that it is, you know, in German, so it's not exactly an immediate something that
well, the I think that makes it actually better, the fact that it's German singing about this. It makes it even more to the point. And also,
That's true, I suppose. But I mean, he could have sung it in English, couldn't he?
Like Nina with 99 Luftballone. I think it's good that it's German and that he sings it in German. I mean, like, point it out to your own people that this can happen again. And it is happening again. Yeah.
The one that I think is the comparator in some ways is the Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, because first of all, it's a fabulous song, very popular, very unusually written, but also an anti-war song. It was written during the Vietnam era, and it was essentially trying to build a comparison between the people who were actually participating in a war rather than the people who run the thing or cause it or declare it or, you know, to look at it from the point of view of a sort of confused victim who happens in this case to be on the wrong side, as the Americans were in Vietnam. So, okay, last chance. Have I convinced you, or are you going to stick with your Kristallnacht?
I think Kristallnacht is less predictable than the Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. And I'm sure the band will feature at some stage again, whereas Bob will never ever feature again in our podcast.
Well, maybe they should. Maybe we should revive them. And it's only been around long enough. Yeah.
It's a very unappealing name, okay. Bob.
I know. But it stands for something, doesn't it?
No, it means daddy in the Cologne dialect.
Oh, really?
I thought it was like an abbreviation or something, but it's... But anyway, that's beside
the point. EIL or something. Right.
Yeah, pill. Yeah, like that, yeah. But it wasn't. But I'm very happy if Kristallnacht... Because it's very topical, I think.
No, it is. You're right. Yeah. No, you're totally right. Especially in South Africa now, during the election, in which
but also in the rest. I mean, Holland just got this incredibly right-wing government who's very anti-immigrants, and it's also all over the world anti-LGBTQ movements happening. So it's a word of warning, and I think I'm happy if you're happy to have.
I'm very happy. I think we should release an English language version. We must take those lyrics and see if we can make the rhymes work in English.
Well, you stumble upon the title already, Kristallnacht. It sounds like a Doors song. And next week we will most likely have a guest.
Okay. Do we know what the guest is going to talk about?
Well, if I know the guest, I think it's going to be heartbreak.
We will tell you more about that next week. Thank you for staying with us. Please do follow us on all of the socials. The full songs are available on Spotify and on Apple Music. We do have an email, so if you disagree with our choices or have any additional choices, please do give us a shout on perfectsongfor@google.com. We also have a Patreon now. Putting these out does cost a little bit. We're not asking for enormous amounts, but if you like them, please give a little nod in our direction. Would help. So if you go to Patreon, there is a Patreon/theperfectsongfor donation page at the moment. And we will play out with Crystal Nost. Cheers, Fred. Thanks, eh?
Cheers. See you later.
Und dann rettet kein Kavallerie, keine Pfarrer kümmert sich da drum, der bis höchstens ein Zett in der Schnee und verslallend Verlässigkeit na und Kristallnacht.